From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Leaving no tabletop unflipped. This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name is Trent.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Garth.
And what is happening tonight?
We are no funny intro. I've totally lost my beat now. What happened there?
That's not funny.
Oh, okay.
No tabletop unflipped.
We have got a very exciting interview with Alan Chang, the designer of Entropy, an exciting Kickstarter that's happening right now. Also, he designed Rise to Power, which was another successful Kickstarter. So he's going to tell us all about how to run a successful Kickstarter, as well as his games. We're going to have Garth telling us about his iOS games, because, of course, he doesn't have to talk to people when he plays those. And we've got our competition.
Your chance to win a copy of Five Tribes.
That's right.
Courtesy of, Bruno Cathala, of course, who gave it to us, and Area 52, who gave it to us.
Our air-friendly local game store.
Great of them to support this radio station and to support this here podcast / radio show, which begins this way with another song for those people saying that my metal choices at the beginning of the night just aren't heavy enough.
Still.
This is Napalm Death. Look, it's only 2 minutes long. Just bear with us. From album number 15 for Napalm Death, Apex Predator Easy Meat, the song How the Years Condemn. Let me tell you, Napalm Death recently wrote to Indonesian President Joko Widodo to plea for the lives of the two Australians who are on death row.
Really?
Yeah, because he's a massive Napalm Death fan.
What?
And I'm not even kidding.
You're kidding.
No. You can see him on the interwebs in Napalm Death shirt. For reals. For
amazing.
Reals.
Okay.
And it's an appropriate opening for this evening of tabletop nerdiness on The Dice Men Cometh here at Edge Radio. What have we been playing lately?
We have been scaling the heights, hopefully, of the world's second tallest mountain when we've been playing K2, which is a game that's been out for 5 years now. It was first published in 2010, designed by Adam Kaluza. Sorry, Adam. And published by Rebel. Now, this is a game that I first saw on, I think it was Sit Down and Shut Up.
Yeah.
Sit Down, Shut Up, Sit Down.
Yes.
Years and years ago.
Apologies to Paul and Queens.
Yeah, that's all right. but look, the game is basically, every player is controlling two mountaineers, and all you're trying to do is scale and survive K2, the second highest mountain in the world. You're playing this game over the course of 18 days, you know, so you've got plenty of time, you would think, to scale it, but it's really tricky.
That's not 18 days of real time. We should just point out.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a fast-playing game, which is one of the reasons why we really like it.
Definitely. It plays in an hour, which is great, and that was even when we played it for the first time, you know, which is part of our big day when we did Brewcrafters as well.
Because you look at it and it couldn't seem simpler.
Yeah. Now, all you've got is two lots of cards. Every player, and it plays between one and five players, has an identical deck of cards. All the cards are green movement cards, where you can move anywhere from one to three on each of the cards. And a set of blue acclimatization cards. All you're trying to do is breathe in some more oxygen as you climb up the mountain. Sorry. Now, the way your turn works is you draw six cards, you choose three of those in secret, and then simultaneously all five of you will reveal your cards. Based on who has done the most movement up the mountain, that player will draw a risk token, which will affect the amount of movement or acclimatization they've got. And then really all you're trying to do is slowly, slowly crawl your way up to the top of the mountain. Obviously, as you get higher up the mountain, more victory points ensue. But what I find really tough about this game is, obviously, probably the halfway mark or up, where it starts to really get taxing. Every square you're trying to move costs you additional movement, costs you acclimatization, which thematically is really, really on board. What do you guys think about the theme on this one?
It's embraced in that simple mechanic. I mean, it's all right there. It's done for you. You know, it doesn't it doesn't take that much effort.
No.
to sort of get, you know, imagine yourself in that role, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, look, the last time that I climbed K2, I was just sucking them, I was sucking them in the whole way up.
Was this as Hillary Idman?
I do like that it's K2 and not Everest, because yeah. K2 is, of course, you know, the climber's mountain.
Oh, yeah. And did you know there is an expansion called Broad Peak? Broad Peak is also known as K3.
Oh.
So it's the third tallest mountain, and the Broad Peak expansion adds a new board. And it's much, particularly one side, it's much more difficult. There's actually three different peaks you've got to scale as you traverse across these three mountains. So that's really
interesting. I was actually looking at that expansion the very, 3 days ago, and our friends at Unhalf Bricking Games has a copy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm very, very tempted.
Although we should say that this game does come with what we like to call double-sided board technology.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
And so it's got a harder setting, and as you're climbing up, the spaces require a little bit more movement, a little bit more oxygen. You've neglected to mention the weather effects.
I was about to get to that.
Ah.
Yeah, so over the course of these 18 days, you will always see what the next 6 days' worth of weather are like. And it's a really simple bit of iconography. It'll show you whether it's going to be sunny. Your climbers can relax and they're not going to have any other penalties.
Mm.
There's going to be clouds and snow, which will impact the amount of effort it requires to acclimatise as you go up. It basically sucks the oxygen out of you. And then there's other effects that'll affect the movement it costs you to get into the next square. But what I also like about it is the fact that as you're sort of scaling the peaks, the maximum number of meeples you're allowed in any square just diminishes and diminishes.
Yes.
So you get to the top sort of third of the mountain, and in a 3 or 4 player game, there's just not enough room.
And again, that's very thematic, that it's harder and harder to fit more people there.
Mm.
This game, I really like it. It's a Polish game. And I was interested to know, Rebel is a Polish company. The same designer, Adam Kaluza, or Kalusha, designed another game called The Cave, which is about spelunking, which is almost a reverse K2 because you're going down. You, at some part of the way, you sort of establish a base hole, if you like, as opposed to a base camp, where you can go backwards and forwards from. But you have to go out and take photos, as well as get up and down and use equipment to get through the tiny holes. You've got to take photos while you're in there, so it's quite interesting. And this game was nominated for the 2012 Kennerspiel. Didn't win.
The Cave or K2?
No, K2 was, as well as being nominated for the Golden Geek for Best Family Games in 2011, so it's quite acclaimed.
I sort of feel like I was surprised when you said it was only 5 years old, because it feels like K2's a game that's kind of been there for a while, and it's fairly well regarded, if considered unremarkable, I suppose. You know, it's not the sexiest of, you know, it's certainly not in the new hotness.
No. Although 5 years is a long time in this gaming market where things
the way
just
things are
tick
now,
over,
yeah.
tick over, tick over. Yeah.
But it's, I guess it does. It hasn't gone anywhere. It hasn't disappeared. It has established itself as being, I'm going to call it a modern classic.
Mm.
And I think it's right there in the sweet spot in terms of gateway games as well, because there's enough heft to actually strategy it out. You know, but I did like it when I was playing you guys, and I came across that idea of clogging up the one narrow gap in the mountain and just camping there and not letting anybody pass. Because that seemed to work for at least a little while.
Yeah, it did. Because, yeah, the other thing we haven't mentioned is that each climber gets a tent that they get to pitch once per game, which just, again, thematically it works, and it sort of helps, I guess, sort of save you a little bit from some of the nature's.
I do find it interesting, though, that you have a skinny climber and a fat climber.
And if your fat climber should, you know, pitch his tent on a precarious precipice at the top of the mountain. I two thumbs up.
Yeah, and if it's not hard enough already, there's another expansion.
What?
Called Avalanche, which is just new new weather tiles.
Yeah, but so, I was looking at that, and apparently it was sort of a promo that
Really?
They aren't repeating again. Mm. So it's a real shame.
Well, it's not like it needs to be harder.
No.
I mean, I think there's enough difficulty there. I mean, if you go too hard too fast, you know, you're likely to actually die, and that's the thing. I don't know whether we mentioned that you can actually die on this and lose your climbers, just like real life.
K2, we love it. If you've never tried it out, then we do recommend it.
And you can play it on BoardGameArena.com.
That's just one of the things we've been playing, along with, you know, that other game that we're not allowed to talk about, but we did talk about last week.
We did talk about it.
The playtest of Vault Wars continues.
It does, and I want to give a big shout out to Ben from Floodgate Games, who only about an hour ago tweeted out our podcast to all of his many followers, so that was nice.
So it's only taken him a week to listen to it.
Well, he's a little bit busy.
Yeah, fair enough.
He's got to spend a lot of time with his lawyers, making sure that he was able to get the okay to post our episode.
Is Floodgate Games going to kickstart Vault Wars? Is that the plan?
That is the plan as far as
can
I know.
Can we even talk about that?
I don't know.
Well, maybe they should listen to the next bit of our show.
Possibly.
Because you're talking to a kickstarting veteran,
absolutely,
Mark.
And he's got some red hot tips. That coming up next here on The Dice Man Cometh. There you have it. Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Man Cometh. That was Old School Souster by Silurius White.
Sound very confident,
yes,
there, Mark.
Yes, well, I'm not too sure. Anyway, coming up next, we've got the interview I did with Alan Chang. Now, just to set the scene, Alan and his company Rule and Make had a Kickstarter about 5-6 months ago, Rise to Power, a card game, and was very successful, was funded, has had some really great feedback. It's out to the backers now. And he's got a new Kickstarter, Entropy. And Alan talked to me about lots of things. So let's hear from Alan now.
So tonight on The Dice Man Cometh, I'm joined by Alan Chang from Rule and Make Games, an up-and-coming game designer in the board and card game scene in Australia. You've just launched your second Kickstarter campaign. Congratulations, funded in around 30 hours. You must be absolutely stoked.
Yes, we've been quite overwhelmed by it. When we did the first campaign, we had set some expectations, and this one just exceeded it by manifold, and so we're struggling to try to keep up with everything.
Look, I can totally imagine, but let's come back and talk about your second campaign in a little while. Rule and Make Games. Firstly, where did the name come from?
It was essentially just Alistair and myself. We originally wanted to make a game accessories company. So the very first product that we created was a hand-bound limited edition premium card case. You know, we had an idea of how we wanted to make it. Alistair is really good with a lot of the hands-on sort of production side of things. So we thought that that's sort of where the direction wanted to go. And the idea of the name Rule and Make was I would be doing a lot of the designs and come up with the creative side of things, and he would actually come up with how to make them.
I have seen your card boxes, and they are amazing. I saw Tom Vassell review one, and I was blown away by the high quality of them. Are you selling a lot of them?
It's sold out, so I've got one left that I'm keeping, and that's it. So we're going to look at doing more after we've done this campaign and other projects that we've got going on, but we will be revisiting the accessories market again.
I did see also on your website your click trackers for Netrunner, which Trent would be very excited in, because that's a game he's right into. And yeah. I believe it's a game you play quite a bit yourself?
Yes. I must admit, I was way into it, I think, within the first sort of cycle. And then when the second cycle kicked in, that's when Rise to Power and everything else started to happen. And I've not had the chance to go back into it. But I still follow the Team Covenant sort of coverages of the tournament plays. But yeah, I don't sort of play as much as I would like.
Yeah, I still follow their Game of Thrones coverage as well.
Yeah, well, I actually really like the Game of Thrones system. And funnily enough, like Rise to Power has a little bit of that. And I really want to sort of try and sort of capture a lot of the spirit of that, the concept, and then try to sort of carry that into sort of more the board game space.
So how did you transition from a gaming accessory company to producing your own game?
On the side, I was doing a personal project, which we were going to make a video game. So Alistair and myself, we're both software engineers. So I was living overseas and I had access to some really amazing artists. So I was doing that on the side and was working on that project while also working with Alistair on doing the accessories side of things. And the two kind of just merged because my time was kind of being eaten up by both of them. So I had to make some choices, and I realized that we wanted to sort of move my passion, which is sort of game design, and into a analog space. And because I play a lot of board games, that was a really natural and easy sort of transition for me. It just so happens that when I was overseas, I was actually in very close connection with the sort of local game dev group. And through that, you know, I just had a lot of access to sort of talent that I could sort of collaborate with.
Thinking back, not quite 12 months, but sort of April, May last year, when Rise to Power hit Kickstarter, things were quite different, particularly for Australian Kickstarter producers. It was really quite a new thing still then, wasn't it?
Yes. So we've done a lot of research on this part, and we were incredibly worried. There were two things that have happened in the past year that has really changed the landscape for Australian sort of tabletop gaming space within mm-hmm. Kickstarter. The first is that when we looked at doing this, the highest funded game at that point in this space was a game called Bedlam. It's done in Sydney. They weren't really in the game community. I think they started off as essentially creative agency or people who are sort of artists and graphic designers who want to use game as a way to sort of create something. Then we really only have, I think, you know, down in Tasmania, we've got the Vikings, the Papercraft sort of tabletop game. And at that time, I think Elevens is by David Harding, actually. Yeah, great game to design that one. So that's really it in terms of I think anything above the 10 grand mark, that was it, essentially. So we were really, really worried. We just didn't think that if we sort of launched it as an Australian campaign, that anyone would pay attention. The second thing that was missing for the Australian market was that there is no industry support. We didn't know any other game designers that were in Australia, and trying to organize playtest groups and such was a real hassle, and we didn't know anyone. We couldn't also ask any questions, and it was really difficult. Luckily, I have a printing background, so because of that, I was able to, at the very least, get, you know, use that sort of understanding to sort of get by. But, you know, we were still really just trying to figure things out ourselves, spending a lot of time and money just to figure out how to actually make this work. A year has passed, and now we've got, I think, probably a dozen or so different groups now within Australia that all centered around board game design. And then that kind of resource is immensely helpful for designers.
Yeah, it seems to be also quite a community where you're able to share information about issues that have happened to help others avoid those issues.
And the reason why the quality of board games has been difficult for within Australia to sort of incubate is because we really need trailblazers or people who's willing to invest a lot of their own time and money and even taking on a lot of risk to essentially establish that groundwork to allow other developers and designers to be able to actually take advantage of. So what I anticipate seeing in the Australian design landscape is collective skill and quality is going to be increased very rapidly, because other people have done the groundwork and have learned all those hard lessons, and they're able to sort of just piggyback off of that. I think it's a very exciting time for Australian game designs, because I can already see some really amazing games coming out of Australia. We've got Jason Kotze-Yang with his games, and we've got Kim, who's also got Monstrous that's coming out. It looks phenomenal. That one's going to do really well. So these are kind of the games that level quality has sort of, you know, gone up a notch for Australian designs. And I really think that that's going to have a bit of a splash around, and you'll see a ripple effect of other people now paying attention to Australia games.
Now, one of the things I did note about Rise to Power was really high quality graphics. Clearly, you've got the similar sort of art quality in Entropy as well. That's something that you guys at Rule and Maker really focused on, that high quality product and particularly high quality art.
Yeah, so that was a very conscious effort on our part. We've spent a significant amount of our budget to compensate for the lack of, I guess, history of who we are as game designers or as a game company. We really needed to show people that we're willing to invest into the production of our games and to show people that we're really serious about this. On the flip side, a lot of designers, if they don't have the capital to do this, they need to try and sell the game just by the game design concept alone, which is not really an ideal method of presenting your game on Kickstarter. So that's the biggest problem there. Game publishers typically don't really care about art. They want to look at your game and your game concept, play test it. You know, if it's fun, the game publisher will actually then take on the role of producing the art and marketing and everything else. around that. That's the conventional way of doing it. On Kickstarter, you have to reverse that process, which means that it's really up to the creators to prove that they've got a really amazing looking game. It's a shame because given that, you know, the design of the game should actually be the focus, but not usually the case on Kickstarter.
That's Alan Chang. And coming back, we're going to have more of Alan Chang, particularly talking about his new Kickstarter hotness, Entropy.
That's a great point of his about how it's all kind of backwards and back the front on Kickstarter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we did, in the interview, I did cut this piece out, but because the interview was such a, well, not long, but like it was so full of goodness, I just couldn't put it all in. Exploding Kittens being exactly the example of that where all gloss, I don't want to say no substance, because there is a game in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at it closely, it's very limited, the actual game. But look what that's done based on having a lot of people following the artist and the art. Mm. Anyway, we'll be back with more from Alan in just a moment. Oh, that was beautiful. That was Natalie Merchant from the Mermaid Avenue album, which was where Billy Bragg took some lyrics from Woody Guthrie, turned them into modern-day songs with him, Wilco, and in that case, Natalie Merchant, one of my favourite artists.
Are we back on, Garth?
I don't know. I was asleep.
Okay. Anyway, you're with Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men Cometh. Just ignore those other two people. Now, we're going to go back and listen to Alan Chang a bit more, and he's going to tell us, and we had a great chat about why they actually went to Kickstarter instead of going the traditional route, and all about his new exciting Kickstarter that's gone absolutely gangbusters, Entropy.
Before we even sort of looked at doing Rise to Power, we had an idea of what I wanted to achieve with using Kickstarter as a platform. And we wanted to do something that was quite different, and not a lot of Kickstarter creators do this. We promise every Sunday without fail, it's almost like doing a podcast in that sense, we will have regular updates that tell every backer everything that we know, you know, for the week that we've done the work. And we've done that without sort of missing a week through to the very end when all the backers got their copies in their hands. That sort of process, we designed that right up front to do this. And this is actually just based on Jamie Stegmaier's lessons that he sort of does. So Jamie's a very prominent Kickstarter project creator, and he's done over 100 lessons now on Kickstarter. And one of his lessons was, don't approach Kickstarter campaigns as if it's a conventional publishing thing, or really take advantage of the social aspect of this. Communicate with your backers, communicate regularly, and let them have an experience with you on this ride that you're doing. And in doing so, you're going to get a lot of goodwill from the backers. And if you make mistakes, there's a bit of latitude there so that you can work with. That sort of helps with the some of the really successful campaigns that once it's funded, then you don't hear from them for several months. So that's a thing that we wanted to sort of change, I guess.
Do you think that the loyalty that you built up in that first campaign is a large part of why this second campaign is funded so quickly?
I believe so. We had a lot of feedback. Just because my name is attached, they're going to back it regardless of what it is. And that's a tremendous amount of trust and goodwill that they have bestowed upon us because of the fact that we have made a promise, delivered on it, and in some cases, over-delivered. I believe that on Kickstarter, different to other mediums, like a traditional sort of publisher, customer-based loyalty really does make a huge difference. And by make a huge difference, I mean the backers, essentially, they're going to make or break your campaign depending on how well you run your previous one.
Let's go on to Entropy, a fast-paced competitive game of risk and deception. It looks really nice. It's clearly in that pool of short games, but with a level of depth in the decision-making. Can I ask, where did this concept come from?
The idea came from the fact that I wanted to create a game that had a time travel element. And originally the game was quite a bit different. But the one thing that I really was adamant about, which funnily enough didn't end up coming to fruition, was I wanted to create a fictional universe where all the players that are playing the game were actually the same character. They're just from different parallel versions of the same universe. So, and that sort of led to the simultaneous action selection concept that you see now in this game. If there was a game where all of you guys are playing the same character, that's a very unique sort of novel concept. That led to a lot of design problems, like, you know, same character means same art for everyone. There were other things, but I think that what came out of that it still has a lot of that DNA. So that's sort of where it came from. Now, at the same time, I was really into a game, and I've been telling everyone to play it. It's a game called Dungeon of Mandom, a Japanese-designed game. It's very, very small, and it has a high level of risk and bluffing as part of the key feature of the game. And in that game, I just absolutely love how minimal it is and how small and easy to play. And I wanted to capture similarly in that sort of vein. I definitely was paying a lot of attention in the Japanese market. And sort of Seiji Kanai's sort of design philosophy is something that I think is really, really interesting. Funnily enough, as it turns out, creating a micro game is a lot more difficult than creating when we created Rise to Power. And all the aspiring designers out there will probably know that when you're designing a game this small, you have no room for mistakes. A lot of complex games, you could have sort of imbalances and sort of quirks in the system, but at the end, everything is going to just sort of work itself out, and you can afford weird parts of the systems. But in a small game like this, if you decide to do a action and that action leads to a different action, it's very, very clear. That's something that's really, I find, very difficult to design. So entropy took a lot longer to design. The name entropy refers to two things. We've got entropy in terms of laws of thermodynamics. There's also entropy in the term that we're more familiar with, which is in cryptography and sort of dealing with ciphers. There's a term there as well, which sort of sees its way to the game. But also in game design, there's a concept of game design entropy, which is the notion of an unfolding state of the game. And what we wanted to create in the game was essentially a game state that changes from one round to the other, and it doesn't go backwards. So that's something that we were very adamant about.
Now, one thing that both games have, which I was amazed about, is the fictional universe behind it. Now, is that something that's come after the games or came through the process of making the games?
It's through the process of making games. So I would call myself more of a Eurogamer. That's the style of games I like to play. But a lot of the designs I come up with tend to have a heavier theme element to it, but sort of borrowing a lot of Euro sensibilities in game design. And so when I sort of sit down and design a game with Alistair, we always start with the idea of what story do we want to tell. And from there, we actually then bring in an author. And we've got, you know, Leith Vance, which we've worked with for both Rise to Power and also for Entropy. Yeah. She would come in and we would chat about what kind of story we want to tell and her input about how she wants to build a world. And from there, we then take the idea to the artist. Different to other game design companies with Entropy, we've got soundtrack, we've got the novella, the story, as well as the game itself, lots of art. That's one thing that we really wanted to put time and effort and money into, was to create a more fully realized game world that people can sort of be immersed in, even for a small game like Entropy.
Okay, so now you've got a lot of experience with Kickstarter, and you're saying that you've been using the lessons that others have learned. You must now, Alan, be at a place where you can pass on your lessons, and I know you have been already, but if you could put it in a nutshell, what do you think the absolute keys to a successful Kickstarter campaign?
Number one is visible production value. Kickstarter has sort of changed the landscape constantly throughout the years, and board games that you get to see and get to sort of participate in have been increasing in quality, to the point where just having a mediocre quality project is no longer good enough. And in a lot of ways, that's a shame, because that means that the barrier of entry has been increased quite significantly. And that sort of means that a lot of really great ideas no longer are capable of getting their project realized. But the hard truth, I think, is that you really do need to have a very good quality and very pretty looking campaign to be able to capture the backer's imagination.
You don't have to look any further than Exploding Kittens as a brilliant example of that. In terms of board game design, it's certainly not rocket science.
The more complete your campaign looks, the less risk the backers feel the campaign has. So the more complete something is, the easier the backers feel, and the quicker they're going to be able to say, I don't care how long this funding is going to go, I'm just going to put my money onto this because I believe that they're able to deliver on their promise.
No worries. Now, I've distracted you with a laser, just like the kittens. Back to the rules. Rule number two.
Having a legion of followers or people who you can count on and also like your stuff and also believe in the things that you do. This is a very difficult thing to actually manufacture and slowly establish that sort of the community that would be willing to follow you. That's very key. And as you just mentioned with Exploding Kitten, that level of success is indication of how important having a fan base is for a campaign. So for number three, it's design the campaign around the strength of Kickstarter. There are going to be games that it's going to be quite amazing as a finished product going through traditional publishing routes. Whether or not the style of game and the kind of game that I'm making is actually a fitting game to be put on. Number four would be ensuring good communication. And that's something that we really strive to work towards. And I truly believe that it's really paid off for us. We've got the second to last update that we've put onto Rise to Power's campaign. It's a retrospective of the campaign. And we detailed as much as we could about how much money went to where, the deliveries, what our expectations were, what sort of we failed on, what we sort of promised to deliver. All the lessons that we have learned, we've got, infographics and a lot of information. And that update, the backers were so happy with it that it sort of made rounds around the internet to the, and then got to Jamie Stegmaier, and he emailed us and said he's really glad that, I guess, that, all the lessons that we've learned from his blog, we sort of applied that, to its fullest extent. He was very impressed by sort of the quality, and campaign creators can fall into a bit of a trap where they believe that once you're funded, you're done. You've got the money, now you can, take a leisurely pace to get your game delivered. But in reality, that's where, once you fund, that's where the work actually is supposed to begin. And if you took to having a consistent communication with your backers, every week you're doing that, it sets you up with a routine, and that actually helps campaign creators to make sure that they're always doing work. Because they know that, Sunday is coming, so I better actually get onto this. And that ensures that there's always progress being made to your campaign. If there was one sort of key thing that I want to leave sort of other campaign creators would be update frequently. We haven't had anyone complain that there were too many updates because we only promised once a week, and it's a consistent schedule, and everybody so far had really been appreciative of the work that we put into that.
Obviously, you've got a lot of experience under your belt now. You've got this great, exciting campaign. I know Entropy's only just started, but what's coming next? We're excited to hear what's coming next.
So this is quite exciting for us. We want to expand Rule and Make as a company, and we really want to move into game publishing. There really isn't a decent-sized sort of publishing company, so that's where we're moving into. And we've signed on several game designers to be publishing their games. So we've got maybe four games that's currently in the pipeline at the moment. So if there are any other game designers that's out there that's listening that have a game idea, suddenly pass it by us, and we'll sort of have a look and see if it's something that we might be able to publish.
Well, I imagine you're probably interested in a certain thylacine hunting game. We might have to have words later.
Okay.
We're going to keep banging on with that one. I'm sure there's a winner in there somewhere.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, fantastic. Look, Alan, we're so pleased to see how successful yourself and Alistair and Ruler Make Games are being. You are a beacon of success in the Australian board gaming industry. We wish you every further success with Entropy and with all the projects that are to come. And we really look forward to speaking to you again in the future about all these new exciting projects.
Certainly, and thank you.
Alan Chang there had some great advice for Kickstarter backers.
And a very impressive work ethic and an open invitation for anyone with a, a half-assed idea like a thylacine hunt to get on board.
Fantastic. So we'll be back shortly with even more goodness on The Dice Men Cometh.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Men Cometh and Beth Orton, their Central Reservations. We're talking tabletop gaming here on this show. And increasingly, it's not just the tabletop, it's the touch screen as well that the kids are into.
The youth. This is a youth station.
I can't bring myself to get into Can you look? All right. Listen, Mark. I know you're behind the controls tonight, but every time we talk iOS games, it's not necessary to play my six's computer games.
Just because you don't have a soundtrack.
We're talking iOS games with Garth.
Yes. And cut. I might have some news that might make you want to join the tabletop revolution on iOS, Trent. You never know.
I doubt that.
Well, let me start with Sentinels of the Multiverse, which was one of my favourite games last year on the iPad. It really transitioned really nicely.
One of everyone's favourites. It was voted really highly in polls.
Yeah, it was probably the fourth or fifth most voted for, which behind Galaxy Trucker and World of Warcraft. Mm. Hearthstone. So anyway, what they've done is they've released their first expansion for this. Now, the first expansion is what they've called a mini pack, and it's only $2.49 on the App Store. What you get is one extra hero, one new environment deck, and one villain deck, which I think is pretty reasonable for $2.50.
Doesn't change the game that much, just a bit more variety.
Correct, but what they've also done is that they've released their first season pass, which basically allows you to then get the future updates, which apparently will include the Rook City and Infernal Relics expansion, a couple more mini packs, the Shattered Timeline, so essentially, you know, pretty much the full game. But this thing is $25. And I just think that's a lot of money for something that I'm never going to have a physical game.
How much was the original game to buy?
$10 or $12?
$25 for this.
For this whole bunch of expansions. And, you know, expansions, yeah, they cost a bit of money. But $25 for something that currently you are going to get one hero deck, one villain deck, and one environment deck. The rest of it will come out at some stage.
What do we say? Like that. What do we say, Mark?
Meh.
Milking the lizard.
Yeah.
So, look, I mean, the shame of it seems to be that what they're doing is, you know, trying to get people to pay for this so that they can fund those expansions to happen, mm-hmm. I presume. Now, Trent, I know you're a fan of losing at Seven Wonders.
Oh, look, it's been a whole show since this was mentioned.
But you'll be very happy to know that we are very close to having the Seven Wonders app out and released and playable. It will have a whole bunch of forms of play. You can play locally with the one iPad passing around the table. You can have multiple iPads in the same room with the same people and play it on the screen there. You can play versus robots if you really want to. But I was watching a video that was posted on Board Game Geek only a couple of days ago, and mm-hmm. it looks like a really decent implementation of it. It's done by the same designers, which is fantastic. And it just played out, like they played a whole game in about 15 minutes.
I must say, one of the great features about Seven Wonders is the artwork.
Mm.
And seeing those cards on that that high-res touchscreen would be nice. So long as, as you say, the implementation's done well.
I do worry about this multiple iPads sitting around the table mode, though, for games, because, you know, are we going to get to the stage where we're too lazy to pull out the cards and shuffle them? Because you lose that tactileness of holding the cards in your hand.
I agree.
And as you say, you know, the beautiful artwork.
This is why I don't want to go down this path personally with my own gaming. You know, but I guess I see the attraction as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I do like, and I mean, Sentinels is a perfect example of that, is that setting it up and breaking it down is just a bit of a nightmare, you know?
That's true. Mm. It is nice to have somebody do that for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. And, you know, similarly, Galaxy Trucker, you know, setting up all those little bits and pieces and stuff, it's just,
oh,
you know,
no, the bit with the tiles, that's the best part, doing your little Tetris thingy.
Yeah, no, I agree. But look, anyway, Seven Wonders should be out, you know, in the not-too-distant future. We're talking the next month or two.
Highly anticipated.
It'll have leaders and it'll have cities as in-app purchases that you can, you know, choose to buy if you want to.
No price point on that yet?
Not yet. And it's only going to be for iPad. So, Mark, your Android devices will not work.
Again, yes.
I'll mention very, very briefly also that Twilight Struggle, constantly at the top of every list about how good a board game should be. We are getting very, very close to the app version of that being released. It was kickstarted, a year or so ago? The designers are working very, very hard. They say they're playing basically every day, working it out and just trying to clarify and get rid of any little, you know, rules, discrepancies and bugs and what have you. But that's looking pretty solid. It's looking pretty good. It hasn't got the artwork on there, but the gameplay itself is pretty good. But then the main thing I wanted to talk about is sort of meshing your Kickstarter updates, Mark, with the iPad stuff. And it's Coup, which is currently on Kickstarter.
Yes.
Trying to get this mobile version of Coup under control, which is, you know, a really good bluffing game.
Yeah, well, this is the little 10-minute party game.
Yeah, of bluffing and manipulation and, you know, sabotage and killing people around
and
the
table. And it's got, what, 12 cards in it? And that's too complicated to carry around. You have to have a bloody app of it?
Well, you don't have to, but you might want to play with your friend who lives in... somewhere on the other side of the planet. Look, it only is $10, but what's been interesting about this is it's funded. Like, it was only going for $5,000 or something, so it was a pretty foregone conclusion that it would be funded. But the thing that has been causing a bit of consternation is what they were going to do with this little mechanic, the spies. When it first came out, they were talking about the spies being a in-app purchase where you would play this card in the game, you would pay for it, and it would give you insights into what the other players are, their historical stats. So what is your most bluffed card? What do you normally play? How do you do it? It was getting a lot of negative feedback.
So it's like a meta game function.
Yeah, basically you pay to win, which is a really bad system.
Hmm.
So fortunately, they've listened to all the feedback and they've changed the ruling so that everyone who backs it gets these spies included. It's a free inclusion that you get to use once per game. You can either use it to hide your own stats and not be able to see anyone else's, or you can use it once per game and you don't get any...
Can you opt out of it completely?
No.
Hmm.
But you can choose to use it or not. But the thing is, it doesn't impact the game that you're currently playing. It'll only still show historical stats, nothing that's actually live and impacting the current game you're playing. Another thing I thought was really cool about it is they've got the original designers on board. They... are giving the original art for the cards. They've designed a couple of alternative backs for the characters, which is cool. But Mark,
mm-hmm.
this thing was going for $5,000. One of the stretch goals was a port to Android. Do you want to make a guess at what the goal was to get this ported across to Android?
$5,001?
$100,000.
You're kidding.
No.
And where is it at the moment?
When I looked a couple of days ago, it was over $10,000.
So in other words, it's never going to get there.
No. So it's just a ridiculously...
Finger to Android, obviously.
Finger, I just think, why are you doing it? You know, it's just crazy. They say, oh yeah, it's something we really want to do, but there's only three of us, so we can't do it. So I don't see the point in putting a stretch goal out there if they're not having any chance of getting it.
Are there other stretch... So, pardon my ignorance.
Yeah.
Are there other stretch goals there between...
Well,
that
they've,
one
they've,
and
they've
others,
achieved
yeah?
quite a few of them. A lot of them were relating to... The designer, you know, producing some other artwork, and there was a few other bonuses back based on the tier of backing that you had. But this one is just completely out of left field. And that's it. There's just it's a bit of a quiet time around, but I thought Seven Wonders I had to mention for
thank
you,
you,
Trent,
yes,
just to, you know,
thank
get you salivating, of course. And, you know, Sentinels, I love it. I'll pay the $2.50 to get another hero and another villain and another environment, but I'm not going to pay $25 for something that I'm not going to get benefit for months and months.
Yeah, and look, just while we're... on Kickstarter, which we weren't talking about. just wanted to throw in their Entropy.
Mm.
Their original funding goal was $8,000 or $9,000, already up to $19,000. They've only been going about a week, so that's fantastic. And another great Australian project we can get behind.
Yeah, and I've backed it myself. It looks really good.
Fantastic.
We've got a print and play version to go. I'm hoping that I think it's going to be August that it comes out. It's going to look really, really nice. But what Alan was saying about those updates, they've already posted at least three of them, which is great.
And now here's a chance for us to give something to you.
Oh, thanks, Trent.
The Dice Men Cometh has secured, courtesy of our friendly local game store, Area 52. Thank you to Carolyn for supporting the show and for supporting Edge Radio as well. And our part in it, has provided us with a copy of Five Tribes,
yes,
the Bruno Cathala mega hit. Because I think you just casually mentioned one day that you hadn't had a chance to play it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And lo and behold, we have a copy.
Yeah, well, I walked into the store and there were a few copies there. And I had a quick chat to Caroline and she wants to support us and Edge Radio and the listeners in getting it out. Then we thought, what better thing to do than... for us to get a copy of the game, We'll play it.
Yes. Make sure the game is awesome.
Yeah, we'll make sure all the bits are there. We'll make sure all the bits are there before we play it, and then we'll make sure the bits are still there before we send it to you.
That's right. We do need to be clear about this. We are going to play this game before before passing it on. It won't come. It'll come pre-punched, all right? But we promise to bag everything up, and it'll all be very nice and neat, and there won't be any pizza stains in it.
And you never know. You might even find some little surprise gifts in there from us. You know, we might illustrate one of your meeples or something.
So, we're going to be giving away this copy of Five Tribes. We're going to do it over the next 5 weeks. Woo-hoo! We're calling it, oddly enough, Five Weeks of Five Tribes. And here's what you do to go into the draw to win it. You send us a picture, a video, or an audio recording, just, you know, record a little something on your iPhone of you playing or talking about your favourite game and why it's your favourite game. Now, we don't just want to hear what your favourite game is. We don't just want something written. We want you to talk to us. We want you to send us pictures, something that we can use in our little social media bits and pieces. Please send us something and you will go into the draw to win Bruno Cathala's Five Tribes over the next 5 weeks. And the email address...
Are we using email?
Yeah, we use an email. It's the way of the future.
Do we have an email address?
We do. Dicemencometh@gmail.com.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Com. Thank you.
That's right, we do.
Okay. Why is everyone laughing?
No reason.
Dicemencometh, all one word.
You may be famous after it gets tweeted worldwide. Who knows what might happen? That's about all we've got time for tonight on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. Thanks for joining us and Alan, and we'll look forward to...
Dice Men Cometh or Cometh? Anyway.
For another time.
Anyway, we'll talk to you again next week. In the meantime, to steal a line from Will Wheaton, play more games.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.